Hello, beloveds. This is Adrian. I hope you're all staying well. I have been very, very sick. So far, not testing positive for COVID, but just feeling really racked by the the germs, the immune systems, the changes, the patterns. I can feel the shifts in us. I wanted to come on mostly to tell you that we're about to listen to another incredible, beautiful episode of our Witch School podcast. And this one was recorded before October 7th. And as you're listening to it, we're entering a phase where South Africa has brought the case for genocide against Israel in international court. And we're getting to watch really valiant efforts being made and still not seeing the changes that we need. So keep organizing, keep calling, keep writing, keep taking action, and then keep listening for how to harness and direct your magical energy as well. Love you.
I think anybody who survived slavery, like the institution, who survived the Middle Passage, they all were witches. Yeah. They all were witches. They were alchemists.
Oh, that's,
you know, they were able to,
that's chills,
to withstand the hells of that journey and that voyage, to be able to live to be 100 and to see freedom, to see Haiti become a free republic, but also to begin a lineage here in the U.S. Mm.
Wow.
She is the oldest witch in my lineage. And so I say light, peace, and progress to the spirit of Agatha Lewis. Light, peace, and progress to the spirit of Agatha Lewis. Light, peace, and progress to the spirit of Agatha Lewis.
Hello, beloved listeners, it's Adrian, writer of stories and songs, emergent strategist, pleasure activist, and witch, living in the land of the Shikori, Skarure, Tuscarora, Eno, and Lumbee peoples. And this is How to Survive the End of the World, our podcast, about learning from apocalypse with grace, rigor, and curiosity. When I say our, of course, I'm including my sister and co-host, Autumn. She's currently on sabbatical. That means she's resting. Leave her alone. In her absence, and in honor of my book, Fables and Spells, I'm going full witch this season and having conversations with some of my favorite witches, conjurers, and magicians in the world. And I'll also be reading you little bits and pieces from the book. Now, what I mean by witch is people who work with elements of the natural world, including human nature, to generate more possibilities. Witching is engaging the essential natural world with magic, healing, or supernatural intentions. Some names for what I'm including in this work: shamanism, sorcery, seeing and healing, herbalism, midwifery and doula labor, reiki, root work, conjuring, ritual and spell casting, astrology and divination, sound baths, altar building, song channeling, all manner of building a direct relationship with the realm of the ancestors, of the spirit, the holy, the ethereal, and ourselves. Now, as always, we have no sponsors. We don't do any ads. We don't have any big funders backing this podcast. We just do it for the love, and your support means so much to us. So if you're not a Patreon already, are you a Patreon or a patron? I don't know. But if you haven't gone to our Patreon and signed up, come support our work. Just a little bit goes a long way. Now, I'm very excited about our guest today because this is someone who I have been a huge fan of on the internet. You know how you find people on the internet, you're like, wait. And the way I found this person on the internet was that she got married. And when she got married, it was an iconic fashion event amongst Black culture. And everyone I knew who was anyone was at the wedding or knew about the wedding and posted pictures and videos of it. It had a theme. It was a major ordeal. And I was like, who is this person that everyone is so obsessed with? Like, who is this? And it turns out it was Chantrell Lewis, who is the curator and co-founder of Shop Black, who is a scholar, critic, and filmmaker, whose work includes the gorgeous In Our Mother's Gardens, who also curates the online space Boku Hudu, demystifying African traditional religions. And you're also a Shango priest. So, and unlike anyone else who's coming on to this podcast this year, I actually wrote a poem about you without knowing I was writing a poem about you, which is the one I'm going to read today. So we'll get to that story in a minute, but welcome, Chantrelle, to the podcast.
Oh, thank you so much, my love. How are you today?
Well, I'm excited. It's been a long, long, long day. And all day I knew I was going to get to talk to you at the end of it. So I'm like, I made it through like PT and a home appraisal and like all kinds of meetings. And I'm in the blessed phase of my life where every single thing I'm working on is something I deeply want to be doing. But it's a lot. My life is very full. And my body, I'm landing back in my body also after some adventures and hijinks and just moments where I was like, what's going on inside there, body? I know what's going on. I need to stop eating dairy again. So
girl, talk about it.
It's okay, so sad. Because I think the dairy is getting more violent.
Oh, absolutely. I was having a whole conversation with my body as I was leaving Starbucks today. Like, why do you have to react this way to dairy?
No, it's not fair.
You know, and it's not dairy and sugar. And I have a very violent reaction to sugar, actually. It's so that sad. Is genetic. And it's very sad. It's so sad. And so it's my daily struggle. Yeah. And I've just been having this conversation with my body. But I'm deep in my moon cycle right now, yes. Which is completely aligned with the full moon.
Yes, good.
And I have excruciating pain. So I'm moving through that, you know. But again, I had this conversation with myself when I left out of the house this morning. I was like, one, I was going to be talking to you this afternoon, so I'm going to push through. Mm. And then I was just like, oh, what were my Agon doing when they had to go and work those sugarcane plantations in Haiti and Louisiana? Uh-huh. When they were feeling like this, they did the work that they needed to do. Mm. And like yourself, I'm doing work that I'm deeply engaged in, deeply fulfilled in, deeply loved, that brings me so much joy. So I'm like, I'm going to get up and do the work anyway. Even though I want to lay down, and I know Trisha Hershey would be like, lay your ass down, sis.
Yes, lay your ass down. And like, you know, I'm like, if you want to lay down while we're talking, you totally can, you know? I'm like, there's no guideline that says we can only do the podcast standing up or sitting up or anything.
Good.
I'm like, you can turn off the visuals. You can lay down. I'm like, I feel like we're already intimates because I leave you voice memos laying in my bed. You know, I'm just like, I'm like,
first thing in the
morning. Yes, exactly. I was like, you know what it sounds like, the first voice. So, Well, I'm glad your body is in conversation with you, right? I feel like I keep having this, I'm in this grief cycle now, and I keep thinking like, oh, well, this is a problem of living. I'm alive, so I'm experiencing this pain, you know? And when I'm no longer alive, I won't experience this pain anymore. But there's trade-offs, you know? I'm like, I like being alive. And so I'm like, I'll pay the cost until I can't anymore.
Yes. And managing how to negotiate pleasure, like food that brings us pleasure, but is not necessarily the healthiest for us.
Exactly. You know? There's this meme that's going around that's like, I can only handle one toxic relationship in my life, and it's dairy, you know?
Send it to me or tag me.
Yes, because I'm just like, this is the, it was my nibbling's birthday this past week, and so I went to the birthday and I was like, you know, I don't want to be all needy. This is the thing that always goes through my head. It's the secret part of me that's like, I want dairy. So but it shows up to me as like, you don't want to have all these special like requirements from people. Just eat the lasagna, eat the little ice cream. Okay, I guess no big deal. Right. Like, girl, go to the movies and have your popcorn with your M&M's. It's fine. And then like, I'm like, yeah, it's fine. Eat it. And then I come out and all of a sudden I'm like, you know, I literally was calling the doctor, like, something's horribly wrong with me and I'm bloated out. You know, like, I feel like Violet from Willy Wonka Chocolate Factory. I'm rolling around. I'm dysfunctional. I think I broke myself and maybe it's a heart attack. I don't know what's going on. She's like, could it be gas? And I was like, oh, no. I mean, I don't think it could be this much. Like, it's, you know, someone would have to pump me with air from outside my body. And she's like, or it could be cheese.
Or it could be cheese. Like, wait, Gemini, your choice. Ugh. Because that sounds like that.
I'm just surrounded by Gemini. I'm surrounded by Gemini. Mm-hmm. I'm surrounded by Gemini. And also Virgo is ruled by their gut. And so.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's us. Mercury, yeah, gut. I mean, we're the same. We're one. Yeah. Okay. I'm glad we established that. So I know that I say witch, and I'm using the language of witch to kind of organize and gather and call in this season. And I want to ask you, how do you identify this kind of otherworldly, deep worldly work that you do?
In full transparency, I'm sitting in my bookstore in Botanica that will be opening to the public in 3 weeks. It's situated in Germantown, East Germantown, very Black Philadelphia. On a cobblestone street.
Wow.
With there are cars passing by. Black Market Vintage, Kiana and Jay are my interior designers. So they're downstairs hammering, mounting, staging, making it even more magical. So I just wanted to, if you hear noise up in here, it's because a lot of action and alchemy is going on in here right now.
That is so exciting.
I can't wait for you to come the next time you're in Philly to host you and experience it. This has been a project. And
what's it called?
Bukuhuru.
Of course. Bukuhuru.
Everybody's like, Bukuhuru.
You're like, you came up with a good name. We're going to keep with that.
We're going to keep it that, right? And even though the Gemini and me were like change and variety and difference, I'm like, girl, we're going to make it simple. That's the Virgo moon in me. It's just like, we're going to simplify things, right?
Beautiful.
See? How do I, what's the question?
So it's how do you identify, right? Like, would you call it, you know, I remember once years ago that I asked a friend of mine, Alexis Pauline Gums, am I a witch or a priestess? You know, and now I feel like, oh, it's to me, I see the, these are all feeding into the same river, like they're little streams and, you know, and I want to name, like, if there's a different way that you're, if you're like, oh, I wouldn't call myself a witch, I'd say this, right? There's room for that.
Right. So I definitely identify as a witch. I mean, when people are like, how do you know that? I was like, because I'm a witch. Yeah. I mean, I probably say that I'm a witch maybe 35 times a day. Like, I know something, how do you know I'm a witch? Yeah. Like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm a witch. Like, you do know that I'm a witch, right? And I know that language, you know, being a Black woman, being of African descent, I know that like witch in like the English language, there's certain connotations, of course, right? We know the history of witch in a derogatory sense, in a European sense, but then in colonized language, for Africans also, there is these strong connotations for witch. And so I'm aware of that, and I still identify as a witch anyway.
Yes.
Formally, because of my formal training, meaning my formal initiation into priesthood, into Lukumi priesthood, which is one of several denominations of Yoruba spirituality, I also identify as an Iola Orisha. That would be, you know, my formal title, or an Iya. I am a priest of Shango, Kawo Kabio Sile, Shango being the Orisha of thunder and lightning. Yes. I identify as a Hoodooist, you know, being that I am first and foremostly a daughter of New Orleans, Louisiana.
Yeah.
And so in all of these ways, these all make up, you know, my identity of spiritualist. I'm a spiritualist. Yeah. These titles make up my framework of how I practice, my lens through which I see the world, the way in which people interact with me, and the way I interact with nature, the elements, and these cosmological entities and deities.
I love all of that. That whole mouthful feels very like, it just feels nourishing to hear. I'm just like, thank you for doing all of those things, for learning all of those technologies. And yeah, I thought you were in New Orleans, actually. When you just said you were in Philly, I was like, wait, but I'm so confused because everybody can clearly tell where you live.
Everybody's always from New Orleans, but and it's so funny. I love that people always think that I'm home because home is
yes, in you.
I am New Orleans. Yes. You know, I am New Orleans. I only left to go to Howard. It was the only reason why I left New Orleans. And then I came to Philadelphia where I found out that my oldest known ancestors came here from Haiti during the Haitian Revolution. Wow. And so that was my Egun connection here. But New Orleans, I am New Orleans.
That's right.
I'm not just from New Orleans. I am New Orleans. Yeah. And so
it's with you wherever you are.
Everywhere. Yep. Yeah. So it's right here.
Now, when did you realize that you were drawn to this path of work, to being a Hoodooist and a spiritualist and becoming a priestess and all of it? How did you know?
I went to Catholic school, K through 12. And New Orleans, I think we have the highest demographic of Black Catholics in the U.S. Okay. And so to go to Catholic school, but Black Catholic schools, and go to Mass where we sing gospel and, you know, it's like church, right? Yes. But it's Black and it's Catholic. And so New Orleans is really rooted in a very deep and old Black Catholic culture. And so growing up in New Orleans, and, you know, going to Mass every Sunday, going to Catholic school, but also my mom was Baptist. So I was like going to a Baptist church also on Sundays. Wow. I was going back and forth between these different denominations. I would say that I had a very close connection and understanding and obsession with the divine at a very early age.
Yes.
Like, I was obsessed with God. I was obsessed with spirit to the point where I almost thought I wanted to become a nun.
Yes. Same. Right.
But that Virgo energy, but then yeah. I was just like, I was so boy crazy though. I was like, this is not going to work out.
I know. I was like, how can I be a hoe and a nun? I don't understand. I'll just wear a nun outfit.
I mean, let's just do that. Yeah. Let's practice. Let's play. Let's dress up. Let's play cosplay as a nun.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
So I literally was like, you know, Catholic until the time I was 7. I was going to a Baptist church, so I wanted to be dunked. And, you yes. know, I want to be dunked in the water, yes. get baptized. I want to be able to take communion. And I was, you know, I wanted to be a part of that understanding of God in the way that my mother practiced it, and her mother practiced it, and her grandmother and great grandmother. Right.
Okay.
And so my parents allowed me to convert, even though my dad being like once a Catholic, always a Catholic, they definitely indulged my little Gemini self,
yes.
my young Gemini self. And gave me the freedom to allow me to have that agency as it relates to my, you know, spirituality at a very early age. And I'm very, very grateful for that.
Yeah.
Because that allowed me to develop a deeper relationship with God and to have a closer connection individually with the divine that wasn't forced upon me by my parents and my family. And it was like led by my desires and my pleasure, you know, the pleasure that I got out of going to a Catholic school, but also going to a Baptist church. So like living in between, like this dichotomy between these two different worlds. And so then me switching schools, and I'm going to another Catholic church where there's like hot boys in the choir and, you know, in the youth group. And I was like, and also I wanted to make my confirmation.
Yep.
So I converted back to Catholicism in the 8th grade and made my confirmation. Saint Joan of Arc was my patron saint, okay. because hashtag the warrior. And the saint of, you know, the savior of Orleans. And so it was very early on. Like if you look at my diaries, like I've been keeping a diary since I was like in the 6th grade.
Okay.
I literally write about boys, books, because I was obsessed. Also, we're smart, you know, we're geniuses, yep. you know, Geminis and Virgos. So I was obsessed with boys, books, and God. Like that's literally in the pages of my diary. So, you know, that was happening. And then I was having these moments where I was in communication with spirit. Yes. That was my ancestors that were coming to visit me,
yes.
you know, and I'm just like 5 years old, my grandmother's appearing, and you know, Haitian great grandfather that died in my great grandmother's house in the bed that I used to sleep in as like a 7. I'm like, why would y'all put
Hello.
Me in this bedroom in a shotgun house, this black ass, dark ass shotgun, silent at night, and spirits are coming to visit me? Why? So at a very early age, I understood, like, I was communicating with spirit. I was going to cemeteries to have conversations with my Egun. And I was having very deep conversations with God.
Good. Beautiful. So, you know, I think what I hear in this, I'm really fascinated. I've been asking people a lot about their lineage, the ancestors and the lineage of the work for them. And if there's a formal lineage, to name that as well, because a lot of what you were just describing, I think of that as like the informal lineage, where it's like the spirits who are just like, hey, tap, tap, I see you. I know you feel me. I know you hear me. And here's a guideline of what you need to do. You know, a lot of it for me was like, I'm getting clear instructions. I don't know what you would call it, but I just know that I'm supposed to trust this and move in this particular way. And then I came across formal lineages that taught me how to feel myself, how to feel others, what to listen for, how to move energy through my hands, all the different things that I have since learned to do. So I'd love to hear from you, like, what do you consider to be the ancestors in the lineage of your work? And are there formal lineages that you, I know there are, but yeah, what are the formal lineages that you claim?
So I mentioned, you know, I always saw something connecting me to Philadelphia, and I just assumed it was an old city like New Orleans, and that's why I felt at home. It wasn't until I started doing my genealogy, like really delving into my genealogy a few years ago, that I'm tracing my ancestry back. You know, I'm from New Orleans, like 7-8 generations, and we didn't migrate. Yeah. We didn't go to Chicago. Our family didn't go out west. We have been in New Orleans, like straight off the boat in New Orleans, right? And so I'm going back and back further and further and further, you know, Free People of Color, and going back to like the 1800s, 1850s, my people are being counted in the census because they were free people of color, right? Wow. So I'm going back further and further. And so until I find, like a few years ago, my oldest known ancestors in Philadelphia that came to Philadelphia from the woman from Haiti. Her husband was born in Philadelphia. These are free Black people living in the late 1700s and early 1800s.
Okay.
Their son goes to New Orleans and then also becomes a U.S. diplomat to Haiti.
Oh. That's
that branch of my family tree. So now I know, you know, Marie Claire Gauthier, who lived here in Philadelphia as a free Black woman, and her husband, Jean Gauthier. These are my oldest known ancestors, right? And so I'm at that point, I'm like resting in this. You know, I went to the place where their graves were interred from this Catholic cemetery where Black Catholics were buried in Philadelphia, a part of Old City now where the boys did the Philadelphia Negro, same neighborhood. And so it was called the New Market region of Philadelphia. And so I'm like, whoa, I'm able to go all the way back to like Haiti, right? Mm. And then a few months ago, while I'm teaching a class on spiritual development and ancestor veneration, I'm just looking up on Ancestry, and I go to the will of Jean Gauthier. And in this will, he says he's leaving his estate to his wife, Marie Claire, and her mother, Agatha Lewis. Now, I'm seeing this woman's name, not to mention her last name is my last name, right? I look her record up, and this is the first time I'm coming across this information. Ask me, where was she born in 1762?
New Orleans.
In motherfucking Africa.
What?
In motherfucking Africa. She was born in Africa. This woman was born in Africa, enslaved, makes it to Haiti, escapes with her daughter, comes here during the revolution, and is a free Black woman that lives to be 100 years old.
Oh, wow.
Her daughter lives to be 103 years old, Agatha Lewis.
Oh, wow.
And so when you say, like, to survive, I think anybody who survived slavery, like the institution, who survived the Middle Passage, they all were witches. Yeah. They all were witches. They were alchemists.
Oh, that's,
you know, they were able to,
that's chills,
to withstand the hells of that journey and that voyage, to be able to live to be 100 and to see freedom to see Haiti become a free republic, but also to begin a lineage here in the U.S.
Wow.
She is the oldest witch in my lineage. And so I say light, peace, and progress to the spirit of Agatha Lewis. Peace, and progress to the spirit of Agatha Lewis. Light, peace, and progress to the spirit of Agatha Lewis. And so when you have an understanding of your identity, right, whose you are, and this is the work that I did with In Our Mother's Gardens, you know, like, what is our lineage and naming our lineage, then, you know, you show up, you have a different responsibility in how you show up and how you are to move, particularly as it relates to your purpose, as it relates to your work, right? And it's imperative, particularly if you are identifying as a witch, because, like, what are we doing? Yes. What are we doing here? Yeah. If it's not to free ourselves, to free each other, right?
Yeah.
What are we doing? And so what have they done? Yeah. And what are we returning to? And that's, my work is rooted in that. And so, and to continue, that's bloodline lineage, yes, right? Yeah. And in terms of my formal training, I have to say the women, the matriarchs of Ile Ashe, namely my Ialosha, my godmother, Oseyem Chawi, also known as Orisaye, Mama Stephanie Weaver, Oke Shande. Our house is descended from the oldest African-American woman to initiate, Shango Gumi, Madrina Marjorie Quinones Ibaye, who was the first African-American period to initiate into Lukumi in the United States of America.
Okay.
So not in Cuba, not in Nigeria. This Black woman initiated in Lukumi here in the 50s, and she was the first African-American person to do so.
Wow.
And that is my formal lineage. My formal lineage also consists of Martha Moreno Vega, who was my first godmother in the tradition, who was the first woman, this Afro-Latino woman, who put aleques on me, who introduced me to Lukumi, who taught me how to tap into my spirituality in a very focused and directed way. And then so many other women, you know, that too many to name right now, that have had an impact on me.
Mm-hmm.
And my understanding of what it means to be a witch, what it means to be a priest, what it means to be a practitioner, what it means to be a godchild, what it means to be a daughter, an auntie, a mother,
yes,
all of these things.
Beautiful.
Right? And how I show up in the world.
Beautiful. Hello, beloved survivors. This is Autumn. I'm emerging briefly from the new home I made for myself in the forest among the gnomes and the fae and magical creatures of all kind, to remind you that if you listen to this show regularly, you might consider making a gift to support our work in 2024. And I'll tell you a little bit about why. Adrienne and I and our producer, Zach, have always felt strongly that we can best protect the content of our show by being listener-supported rather than ad-sponsored. Being financially supported by the people who are most directly impacted by our show means that we can fearlessly move towards the most difficult topics, the most challenging conversations, and the most courageous edges of the time we are living through. From our apocalypse survival episode on the right to arm and defend ourselves, which aired in the midst of the 2020 uprising, to our 2023 ceasefire episode on the genocide being perpetrated on the Palestinian people in Gaza, we have maintained our show as a place to hold out visionary possibility with our eyes trained on liberation for all oppressed peoples. That's because we aren't worried about being dropped or canceled. We know that the people who most need to hear us can and will hear us. And that's because of you. So we want to thank you, all of you, who support our show in all of the myriad ways that you do it. And we want to invite those of you who haven't yet to consider making a sustaining gift via Patreon. In exchange, You do get some sweet, cute merch, plus access to content that we record only for patrons. So you can go to patreon.com/endoftheworldshow to learn more. And if you're wondering if I'm coming back, I'm coming back. Every time I hear folks who can speak about their lineage this clearly and with this level of familiarity, I feel this hunger because mine is less known. It's less findable. You know, like when I go searching, a lot of it is like, you know, I was one of those people like, I guess I have to do ancestry.com because nobody knows, you know, like things were not written down and things are not known. And I have to try to weave the stories in other ways. And it's so good for myself. It's like a good, maybe it's not even jealousy. It's like Schadenfreude or something. It's like the good stuff, you know, where I'm like, oh, it makes me so happy that the line is unbroken, that your knowledge of the line is unbroken, and that the medicine, I think it accumulates across generations when you can feel it that way. Not that it doesn't, you know, I know I feel an accumulation spiritually as well, but I think there's something so beautiful, you know, when I speak of my ancestors, I have to speak of them without their names and I can feel them, but I think there's something so beautiful about being like, here is who it was. And I know some of the story and I'm really grateful that you have that and that you know that. You know?
And what I'll tell you, Adrienne, though, they're just waiting for you to uncover. I mean, this was the information that I knew 3 years ago. Yeah. I didn't know Agatha's name last year.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is part of what's brought me back to North Carolina. You know, what I do know is that my lineage is all in the Carolinas. The story of us being on this land happens here. Mm-hmm. And there are still ancestors. There are still members of my family who are living who I think I can ask and probe and find out more. I'm like starting to do that, like, send me these pictures. Tell me this. Tell me more. But then there's just parts of it that are unknown. There's parts of our story that are mysterious, and which also feels like, you know, part of being a Black American. It's just, you know, there's like places where it's intentionally like you can't see here. And so then it's like there's other ways to listen, right? There's other ways
to listen.
And to me, the work you've been doing within Our Mother's Gardens, to me, that felt like a spell. Watching that entire piece, it felt like a spell that was cast that was just like, you know, we can cast gold on all of these lineages and honor all of them, you know? So maybe that brings us into this next work, because I feel like you're casting spells all the time in all these ways, and it makes you extremely prolific as a creator. Like when I'm like, I don't even understand how you do all the things you do, right? So could you tell us a little bit about all the ways that you do your witch work?
I'm like, it's alchemy.
It's alchemy across the board.
Yeah, you know, like, and people are like, how do you do it? I'm like, Shango.
Yes, yes. Like, I hand it over to something larger than myself.
There's no way. I'm like that during the pandemic, you know, I did this whole film and I found footage. And I mean, to that point, I'm still going to, you know, even the mystery, I feel like, and what I encourage folks like in my book club and that's talking about the work. I have an ATR's book club. You know, I'm helping people to demystify the Black divine and connect with their ancestors. And I mean, there are people who have been adopted and they found their ancestors. They've learned these names. And I really believe, like, once we just say, we start talking and I'm like, y'all, I want to know your name. You know,
there's ways.
You need to give me some information.
Give me. Yeah. Well, and you know, also it's like knowing, like, I don't, Imani Perry and I realized that we were cousins because we were both looking, and then we found each other.
Wow.
And so then that unveiled, it's like, oh, so there's a, then I was able to find family tree and be like, oh, here, this is the intersection point. So now we know that that ancestor was carrying something that produced these lines that led to our generation and being two people who are Virgos, you know, born a day apart, who are writing nonstop, right? But I'm like, there's something very interesting. I'm like, what was that ancestor up to?
What were they doing?
What were they doing?
Exactly. For us, for us to be here manifesting the way we do. Yeah. So after the film, it was, I'm like, was it that obvious that I was casting a spell? I knew, you know, when Ava told me I needed to add like 20 minutes to the film. And again, this is in the pandemic, like the height of it, the beginning of it. So there was no one, not going out and shooting people, you know what I mean? Right. Like, you know, it wasn't like productions and there was definitely no money. You know what I mean? A lot of my contract work, you know, halted, like so many of us during the pandemic because there were so many unknowns. And so I'm literally sitting there and I'm like, how the fuck am I going to do this? And I was like, I'm going to, like, I was like, I need to film someone who can help carry this film. But the missing piece is also really instructing people on how to communicate with their ancestors in a way that's very accessible for all of the Christians and those folks teetering on that line with, should I stay in the church or should I not stay in the church? And it was Mama Coco who, you know, is my former grad school professor that I met in Brazil back in 2003, 2004, when I was about to start grad school. And I found out on that trip, and she also found out that she was going to be teaching at Temple in that department, and then was going to be my professor of African religions while we were in Saudade Bahia, you know. Go to Mama Coco's house and just let her be Mama Coco.
I love it.
And it was such a huge risk, you know. I mean, it was such a huge risk from the audio, from the sound of her slippers sliding across the floor and all of her jewelry and her putting on her makeup while she's on camera, just her being this free Black woman, this supreme witch, right? This Ia, this elder, this scholar, this survivor, this storyteller, this alchemist, right? This magician, this shapeshifter, all of these things, this warrior. I was like, she's going to do the work. There's a portal being opened. And I understood in that moment what was the charge for that film. I understood what was my responsibility. And so regardless of how scared and afraid I was and how much fear I had, I was obedient to spirit that told me, if you want to be a king, child of Shango, women are the kingmakers and you need to service women, right? And in servicing women and servicing Black women, that would unlock the kings of my kingdom for me.
Okay.
And so, you know, that I understood that that would open things up, not to the extent of like I'm opening up a Botanica in a bookstore, but that led to us doing these conversations online again during the pandemic. That led to me establishing the ATR's book club, which has hundreds of members across the diaspora. That led to me founding Buku Hoodoo Fest in Louisiana and New Orleans last year. You know, it's like 3-4 day celebration of all things African traditional spirituality. And then me just doing my own personal healing. Like, I think me learning and studying and healing is also deeply a part of my witch work.
Yes.
Because I can't help support somebody else in their journey if I'm not deeply embodying that work myself, if I'm not in a deep therapy practice, if I'm not literally getting inside of my body, which has been my, like, as we talk about food, right? And this love-hate relationship with like dairy and with me also with sugar, is like getting back into my body. Cause you know, as cerebral people, you know, Geminis and Virgos, we stay in our heads, right?
I'm like, I've got a nice couch up here. I just want to chill up here. This is great.
Comfy.
Yeah. It's but I love this because I'm like, I really believe you can't teach what you have not practiced to the level of embodiment. And you can point, you can learn beside other people, you know, but if I'm trying to tell people like, here's something that can work for you, I have to know it because I've been inside of that.
You have to know it. And to that point, you know, there are so many people who are going through these quick, fast initiations, you know, and it's like, oh, I'm a Iyanifa, oh, I'm a Baba this, I'm a that. And, you know, folks get a deck of cards and then I out here reading people. Baba Laos trained 12 to 20 years before they're working on their own, right? And so like even in Lukumi, we go through a year-long initiation process as Yawos, right? Which means bride in Yoruba. And so for me, even though I'm servicing people, I'm like, I am in deep learning and training right now. While my elders are here, I'm deeply learning. And so sometimes I feel even uncomfortable with calling myself like a healer, yes. right? I definitely certainly don't identify as an elder because there are people, you know, my age who have like 30, 40 years of initiation, right? Right. And I feel like I'm still a baby in this. And so I'm humble enough to know that in order for me to deeply do this work, I have to be learning so that I do know, right? Yes. I have to learn. I have to study. I have to train. I have to humble myself. Yes. I have to support a hierarchy, a healthy hierarchy,
yes.
right? So we're not talking about a hierarchy within patriarchy. We're talking about a hierarchy within a matriarchy, but respecting the place that I have at my elder's feet
yes.
and being okay with
yes.
that, right? And so as I'm showing others the little that I do know, I'm doing so while also understanding there's so much more that I don't know. And mm-hmm. that is my, mm-hmm. A part of my charge, right? To learn as much as I can so that I can responsibly and ethically help people to heal themselves and help bring people to greater understanding.
Yeah, I really love this, Chantrelle. I think there's also, you know, I feel always torn in both directions, right? Like I feel like on one hand, the rigor and the longevity of practice is what it takes to really learn something from the inside out. And I'm always thinking about how do we make things as accessible as we can? And
yes,
so I'm always back and forth between, I'm like helping people get, I often think my work is helping people get curious enough to move towards something. And I'm like, if you get yes. curious enough to move towards it, the right path will unveil itself to you. And you will do something on it that I couldn't do. You know, like each person has
Absolutely.
A different way that they're going to walk down it. I just got off the phone with someone who has started doing the kind of somatic healing work that I do, started doing that because of something that we did together like a decade ago. And it was
wow.
so cool to hear what they've made of it, which is a fully different path than what I've made of it. Now I'm like, how do I bring it into song and ritual? And, you know, they're like, how do I bring it into coaching and supporting people who are trying to lead in a very difficult environment for people to lead in, you know? But I'm like, it's the same at the root. It's the same way of being like, how do we listen inside the body? And how do we listen through
right.
the trauma? How do we listen to hear what the healing is that's possible? And as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking both about the radical act of being a student and the radical mm-hmm. act of having elders and being able to be in a relationship with your elders. And I also
yep.
want to ask you if there's other things, other skills, other technologies that you wish people had access to in this apocalyptic time from your practice.
I mean, besides like the things, because people are, you know, I was like, when I was even thinking about our conversation today and when I think about the shop and what are people looking for,
yes.
right? When they come to me, when they come to the book club, when they come to these stores and they buy things, people are looking for magic. They're looking for
yes.
the ability to transform and manipulate their life circumstances, right?
Yes.
Ultimately, at the end of the day, when people buy a candle, when people do any kind of rituals, when people say prayers, when people do say chants, when people burn incense and sage, you know, when people do cord cuttings, when people do all of these different things, they're trying to access their innate alchemy so that they are literally transforming and manipulating their material reality, right? And trying to take the agency that's been stolen from us through these like Judeo-Christian patriarchal systems and dogma and trying to claim back what is like theirs by birthright,
yes.
right? By DNA, by bloodline. And so people are looking for that. And like, to your point is I am trying to help people understand, like, you don't have to do what I do and how I do it. You need to, the tool and technology is getting as close to your truth as humanly possible to that very specific thing that your spirit, prior to you even coming through a womb to get here,
yes.
right? That you chose to do And that was a part of a lineage, that was a part of karma, part of your destiny, part of many things for you to get as close to that truth as possible.
Yes. Yes.
That is a tool and that is a technology. And it's also an imperative. I think when, you know, we talk about our radical freedom and, you know, just like the future, it's, we have to move closer to our individual, like, truth.
That's right.
So that we can move, like, as a collective, we can do the work that we need to do for our survival and our thriving, not just our survival, but for us to thrive as a people,
yes,
as a society, as a species. It is so imperative. And so, like, true, like, that throat chakra, you know, work, especially as survivors, like, opening up that throat chakra, and then also getting in touch with your sacral chakra. I think those are two of the most powerful things that we can do as human beings and as we can do as Black people, is opening up the throat chakra, which is a tool. And that's what I'm trying to teach my nieces and my bonus daughters and any young women I come in contact with, is like speaking truth to power, that I shade, that we talk about, that no more the breath.
Yes.
That's why in spells, right? You know, in spell, like the word, the spoken word is such an important part of that, because the spoken word alone can bring about a change in a material reality.
Yes. I mean, this is the thing. I'm like, please understand this, y'all. What we say, it's mattered. It's mattered before and it matters now. And it matters not in the way you think, right? So it doesn't matter in a way of trying to control conditions. But I tell this all the time. I'm like, you are writing the world into existence with the things that you say. You are casting spells all the time. The way you speak about yourself, the way you speak about your loved ones, the way you speak about the potential of your family, the way you speak about the potential of your life. I'm like, the world hears all those vibrations and it's impacted by the intention inside of them. And yeah, I think it's, you know, I look at someone who's lived the way you live, where it's like, you create spells through containers, you know, like, I'm like, oh, you're like, we need a spell for abundance for Black people. Here's Shop Black, right? We need a spell that helps us tap into our matriarchal lineage. Here's In Our Mother's Gardens, you know? And you keep doing that with the Buku Huda Fest. It's like, we need a spell that invites people to open up inside their capacity to witch, to cast spells, to transform the conditions around them. Like, I think there's something about that, putting your beliefs into action, that is really uniquely realized in the way that you do your work, that it's very exciting to be, you know, to coexist with you. Because I'm like, oh, there's going to be something new. You know, you come up with ideas and you manifest and you actually are like, here it is now. I think a last question I have that I'm really interested in to hear your answer is, you know, there's not a world in which you get completely healed and then you begin to do this work.
Right.
And
I
notice that there's a cycle in me. There's times when I'm really good and the energy that's flowing through me is really golden and really pure. And I feel like, yeah, it's all good. And there's other times when there's a lot of shadow and maybe there's even confusion in me. There's doubt in me. There's other things moving in the channel. And I feel like one of the things I'm learning to hone is how to consistently deliver the pure gift no matter where I am, because the pure gift comes from beyond me. And I'm like, that can always come through. But I'd love to hear from you if you have advice on how you, or just lessons on like how you continue to do the spells, how you continue to do your witch casting work, even as you're doing your healing work.
It's that part. You know, before we hopped on, you know, we were talking about, you were mentioning some things about grief, right?
Yes.
And I've just survived such a huge season of grief.
Yes.
Through physical, like the deaths of like loved ones. Two of my closest cousins, you know, passed away like right after each other. Friendship losses, like my best, three of my very best friends, who are like more than friends to me, were family,
yes,
One of them, it felt like a divorce, you know, essentially, because that's the level of our relationship, the nature of our relationship.
Yes.
And so it was a lot of grief, right? And I was talking to a friend yesterday about one of those, you know, friendships. And I was able to see one that I should have been in therapy years ago. You know, I mean, when I say years, like probably as soon as I came out the womb, because, you know, my umbilical cord was wrapped around my neck.
Oh.
And in Yoruba land, they call those types of births or children Aina, which is an Orisha, who is the sister of Shango.
Wow.
And is the fire that comes out of Shango's mouth. And so children who are born in that condition oftentimes become children of Shango and priests of Shango,
yeah.
Right? So that was such a revelation. But I mean, that was a traumatic experience,
exactly.
Coming out of my mother's womb.
That way.
So I probably needed some therapy, you know, from that.
Yes.
And I think healing has to be synonymous with witch work. We have to delve into the ugly, the shadow, that which we're even afraid to not only speak, but that we're even afraid to remember, because we believe that it's going to break us. Just the thought of what we experienced alone will break us, right?
Yeah.
And shatter us into a thousand little pieces. But it's absolutely necessary, because these traditions alone, whether it's the divination, it's being able to communicate with God and getting a direct answer,
yes,
back, channeling, you know, being possessed, none of those things will in and of itself be able to heal us if we're not able and willing to do that work of going to the dark recesses of our lived experience,
yeah,
and even the lived experience of our ancestors, to heal not only for ourselves, but heal the generations coming after us.
That's right.
And even heal the ones that came before us, because they didn't necessarily always have the tools at that time,
that's right,
to do that healing work for themselves. And so it's like, I have to live. Like I must be in therapy. Even breaking up with those friendships like that, I don't think I would be talking to you about this work. I would not be deeply engaged with this work if I did not, as much as I love those people and still do.
Yeah.
I have a deep love for them, right? And I experienced a deep loss at, and I experienced a lot of grief and a lot of mourning at the distance that exists between us, but it was a part of something. I had to be brave enough to do that.
That's right.
In order to get the closest to my truth.
Oof.
And the closest to my purpose. I had to experience that loss in the same way that I had to confront my cousin who molested me.
Yes.
Right.
Oh,
and then,
yes,
and my entire family. And if that meant me being ostracized by my family and being hurt by that, And experiencing pain over that, experiencing that only for several years later through the level of work and the expression of rage and everything else in between, that I'm able now to forgive my cousin, something I didn't even think was remotely possible.
Yes.
And I would say, and when I say forgiveness, not in a Christian sense of forgiveness, like,
yeah,
turning the other cheek and you've harmed me. Like, I'm very clear about your harm and the impact and everything,
yes,
but I can't reconcile with you, because in order to keep my bloodline going and keep those ties, that and as the next matriarch of my family.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
That's the work that I need to do.
That's exactly
right. And I'm prepared to do now because of my healing.
You know, I often say to my friends, I don't know how people are doing this life without therapy, astrology, and tarot. And I'm like, you're just walking around not asking any questions and not having
exactly
any space. So I want to say thank you for the vulnerability of what you shared in that, because I think part of what I'm interested in is pulling the work of healing off of any pedestal and trying,
yes,
to make it something that's like, yes, we can rigorously practice for a long time. And even when we do so, and even when the divinity of existence is filling us up, we're still at the same level as anyone else. That's the trick of it all, right? So we're still,
absolutely,
doing this human experience, and there's still ancestral and present day and future healing work to do, right? That feels so important to recognize so that we're not trying to compare ourselves to those we think are healed and done and
right.
off somewhere else, but we're just being like, no, like we're supporting each other constantly.
Absolutely.
I really enjoy listening to you. I really enjoy talking with you and learning from you. And I want to read this poem now. So this poem, so Amy Sherald painted a portrait called Saint Woman. And this was in 2015. I saw this painting and I was immediately blown away by the painting. Something about the stance of this woman and the beauty of this woman just really spoke to me. And so I sat down and wrote a poem. And then that whole explosive wedding extravaganza thing happened. And everyone's talking about Chantrell Lewis. And so I go to your page and somewhere in that mix, I saw the painting and you wrote about it. And I was like, you're my saint woman. So, and you know, it just felt like, okay, well, pay attention to her. So that poem is now included in Fables and Spells, which is going to be read now. Saint Woman. No such thing as her. That's what no one want to understand. She catch your eye because she can, but she already memory. Beyond the brief pulse of interest, she float around herself, roots, tendrils ever reaching, never landing, bitter cloud. Not she not young like she was, not easily slipped from her attention. She not old, but time closing in. Someday she taste fear at dawn, try to be alone in it, no words anyway. Saint woman, wear a river in public, so she can keep moving to the sea. Everyone who see her start to pray, but she got no miracle left. Just this breath and the next breath, licking the salt away. Saint
this
woman.
Made me cry.
You know, no other poem I've ever wrote is like this poem. So thank you for this poem. Thank you for being someone who must be painted and for someone who must be listened to and for someone who is impacting us so deeply. Thank you.
I love you.
I love you. I love you. Take it easy on yourself. Thank you so much to our beloved listeners. Thank you for tuning in and listening. Our show is produced by Zach Rosen, the God. We are on Patreon at End of the World Show, on Instagram at End of the World Show PC. We'll see you next time. Cast a spell. Tackle myself.